6 of King Pranjana. Next on the page. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ete Tvam Sampratikshante Smaranto Vaishisham Tava Samparitam Aya Uttaish Chindanti Uthita Anyava Iti Tvam Sampratikshante Smaranto Vaishisham Tava. Samparitam Maya Kutesh Chindam Jyotitha Manva Iti Tvam Sampratik Chante Smaranto Vaishisham Tava Samparita Maya Kutesh Chintan Yutitha Manyoha Tetvam Sampatik Shante Smaranto Vaishasam Tava Samparita Maya Kutesh Chintan Yutitha Manyoha.
Injuries
you have have afflicted upon them. After you die, they will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. Narada Muni wanted to draw King Pratyanabharisat's attention to the excesses of killing animals in sacrifices. It is said in the Shastras that by killing animals in a sacrifice, one immediately promotes them to human birth. Similarly, by killing their enemies on a battlefield, the Kshatriyas who fight for a right cause are elevated to the heavenly planets after death. In Manu Samhita, it is stated that it is necessary for a king to execute a murderer so that the murderer will not suffer for his criminal actions in his next life. On the basis of such understanding, Narada Muni warns the king that the animals killed in sacrifices by the king await him at his death in order to avenge themselves. Narada Muni is not contradicting himself here. Narada Muni wanted to convince the king that overindulgence in animal sacrifice is risky because as soon as there is a small discrepancy in the execution of such a sacrifice, the slaughtered animal may not be promoted to a human form of life. Consequently, the person performing sacrifice will be responsible for the death of the animal, just as much as a murderer is responsible for killing another man. When animals are killed in a slaughterhouse, six people connected with the killing are responsible for the murder. The person who gives permission for the killing, the person who kills, the person who helps, the person who purchases the meat, the person who cooks the flesh, and the person who eats it, all become entangled in the killing. Narada Muni wanted to draw the king's attention to this fact. Thus, animal killing is not encouraged, even in a sacrifice. Translation once again. All these animals are awaiting your death so that they can avenge the injuries that you had inflicted upon them. After you die, they will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. Here in this chapter, the characteristics of King Pranjana, Narada Muni is going to enlighten King Pratyanabharisat with his allegorical story of King Pranjan, who is actually King Harishat himself, Pratyanabharisat himself. But in all these allegories, he will finally come to understand that what Narada Muni is saying is referring to himself. Very interesting and chapters. How Narada Muni has given different names to different parts of the body and the different activities of the body, gross and subtle, and the material nature itself. He's put it in a picture form, in a story form. Even abstract things he has given personality. So it makes an interesting story. It enlightens us how complex actually this material world is. Even the body, it's so complex. So many different elements which are to be considered. The body is considered as compared to a city with nine gates, because there's nine holes in the body. And then the different senses and different desires, they're considered to other personalities who come to distract. So very, very, it really opens our eyes to see how involving this material world is. Even modern science, when they look at the body, it's such an intricate thing. They can't understand how it's like it is. It's like a mini universe. I think it's going on very perfectly. The different components of the body, even if you go inside the cell, the microbiologists do, they find it needs to make cells, etc., like a factory going on inside the body, producing new components for the body, keeping the body moving. It's very, very intricate and evolved, very complex. So these new findings, they put the theory of chance or evolution from a primitive form, they knock them way back. So it's a big, it's quite a topic. But the fact is, it is like that. The material world is so complex. I mean, how many births have we taken here in this material world? We've been told that we've been here for many, many hundreds of births, thousands of births, unlimited, anadi. Nityabhada, eternally conditioned. It means we've been so long that we cannot trace out the beginning. How much karma we have waiting for us? Because karma doesn't come in sequence. Sometimes it comes, sometimes you feel you get it immediately, otherwise it comes later on, it comes the next life. It may come many lives later. Nobody can understand. So how much reactions have we got lined up waiting for us to come and affect us, you know, to affect our subtle body, and that will force us into some action, some decision and some action. We just can't know these things. And all those devas, 33 crores of devas, they're doing their bit. It's so bewildering. This is Krishna, huh? I'm a Maya. It's my energy. Supreme energy in the material world, Maya Devi. And her business, her order, instruction from Krishna, her business that she has to do is to keep us absorbed in forgetfulness of Krishna. Huh? The idea is to become like the Lord, to be the controller and the enjoyer. So therefore, the first thing necessary is that we forget Krishna's position. So that's arranged, when we come in. And her business is to keep us absorbed, so we don't remember Krishna, because that's what, then we can't fulfill our desire of trying to be Krishna. So that's taken away. But then you have to contend with so many things that we don't even know about, we can't even see. So many effects, so many subtle things which are, and we're completely bewildered. First of all, we're all thinking these bodies, right? Majority of the day, we're thinking, intellectually we may understand, you know, we're not the body with the soul, but practically speaking, you know, we act like the body all the time. We're always acting for our improvement. Everyone, all the living entities, they're all acting for a better state of existence. Everyone. What else is there to do? Because it's actually an uncomfortable position we find ourselves in. So always trying to improve. We're never satisfied. Always want improvement. Individually, collectively. This is going on all over the world. You have to admit that. And every moment of the day, any time of the day practically, we want improvement. Right? We want to find a cooler place these days. We want to chant more sincerely, right? We want to actually, you know, perform our devotion service with bhakti. We want to actually make that connection with Krishna. When will it happen? And we always want, you know, something. Always want something. There's always that lacking is there. We're fortunate enough to be at least on the right direction, on the right path. Otherwise, before we came to devotional service, before we heard of devotional service, we didn't know what was going on at all. At least we had some glimmer, you know, basic, gross idea of what is going on, simply by hearing from the intelligence that we're actually different from the body. controlled by this, practically controlled by the material energy. So everyone is there. Krishna says this is lust, karma, krodha. Arjuna asks, what is it that forces a person to act even against his will? Even he knows it's wrong, he'll do something. And Krishna says it's lust. It's lust alone, Arjuna. It's sitting in the senses, it's sitting in the mind, it's sitting in the intelligence. How can you escape it? It's always there. So even if you're very intelligent, the intelligence is influenced by lust. Right? So the more you're in the mode of goodness, to that degree it gets less. But even your intelligence, that's why we never agree perfectly on every point, and because we're different also, we have slightly different ways. Right? Some people will perform their devotion service and their accent is on one thing, devotional service, some of the accent is on another thing, which is okay because we're different and there's 9 different ways we can perform. But I think my way is, you know, I prefer to do it this way than your way. I prefer to just be engaged in devotional service all day and not worry about it. I prefer to just, you know, study this Sambandhagyan and understand who I am in relationship. I just want to hear about the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan. I just want to just focus on the holy name, nothing else. You know, everyone's got their own, and they're all okay as long as they're one of the 9 devotional processes. But I'm thinking what I'm doing is best for me. So whatever you do, whatever we do, we're thinking it's the best because of this. Maybe the best also, but because of this lusty intelligence, then every endeavor, Krishna says, is covered with some fault. And the idea for betterment is to be peaceful and happy. That's it. That's a real goal. So maybe we're going to Krishna. We're using the process of Krishna consciousness for that. So that's why we don't actually attain the real fruit of Krishna consciousness, because we haven't actually surrendered to Krishna. We haven't actually surrendered the idea of being satisfied and happy. Krishna's pleasure hasn't superseded our pleasure. It's still, that self-interest is still there, very deep in the heart. The false ego, you see, it's the last thing that goes. How will you overcome it? Very difficult. By Krishna's grace, you can overcome. So the best you can do is just sit yourself in the line of duty, which is coming from, by intelligence. Sit yourself in the line of duty. Otherwise we don't know what's going on. We have to hear and follow. Otherwise how can we understand what's going on? How do we know that if we chant Hare Krishna we get love of God, associate with devotees, take Mahaprasad and all those things? How do we know that we get those results which are promised? We have faith. That's all, but we don't know. We don't actually know until we actually achieve some direct experience. Direct experience in the material world is not very good because the senses are imperfect. But direct spiritual experience is good, it's valid, because it's, there's something there. So we get a little, Krishna gives a little scope, a little taste now and again to keep us encouraged. those two, these two things, that is why I said pure unalloyed devotional service is free from karma and free from jnana, free from the desire for relief, and free from the desire for happiness. Very difficult to get them out. It's a difficult situation. Material birth is the soul is actually suffering here, suffocating. And as soon as it gets nice, you know, then we become very relaxed. As soon as it's difficult, then we become very more serious about spiritual life in general. But the human form, it's meant for sacrifice. It's not meant for adjusting the material world so you can be happy. That's not the real benefit of the human life. Because anyway, you can't stay here. And you can't do it anyway, not for long. Everyone's had this idea since the beginning of creation. Same idea. But who's been actually successful? Where is the role model? If there was something, if it really worked, if you could do it, then people would be doing it by now. If someone hit the success formula, we'd be following it. We don't even in the Puranas, to speak of modern history, which is only, but even in the Puranas, it's talking about thousands and thousands. When is there a really good time in history? You know, when Lord Ram was here, when Yudhisthira was ruling, not really long. 100 years, out of millions and millions of years, Harishchandra, you know, a few very powerful, or the Lord Himself, Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, He comes as a, you know, different ballgame, or He empowers these great personalities, and they direct the citizens in such a way that it's actually nice, you know, by following everything, following duties very nicely. But you don't hear much of it, right? Out of billions and billions of years, you get a few hundred years where it's, you know, everything's nice. There are no problems. How are you going to wait for the Lord to, you know, but how is that going to help us? So overall, the material world is not for that. But that's what we think, how to adjust, and then we can be happy. That's not the real thing. And these narrations in the Bhagavad Purana are full of this, emphasizing this point again and again. Don't try to become successful materially. It doesn't work. Narada's enlightening the king, Parisat. A Prussian about it said, why are you doing all these excess animal sacrifices? Of course it's religious, right? It's prescribed in the Vedas, you can perform this sacrifice, different types of sacrifices, sacrificing animals. Even to test the mantra, you could run, move an old cow through the fire, and by mantra, he would come out unarmed with a young body. That's just to prove the efficiency of the chanter. That's to prove he's okay. This Brahman is okay. He has some shakti. He's chanting the mantra. That's proof. The cow went in and came out with a rejuvenated body. And then he can start the real business. But you don't take it as an excuse to the other. There are some animal sacrifices, but generally they're for those in the mode of Raja and Tamo. And like their injunctions for eating meat, there are religious ways to eat meat. So they're for people who will eat meat anyway. So to save them from going to hell, there's a religious way to do it. So Narada's pointing out by his mystic potency, look, all these animals you're killing, look up in the sky, he gives him some divine vision and he sees all these animals waiting up there. He said, they're all waiting for you. And they're very angry. You killed them unnecessarily. They didn't chant, your mantras weren't chanted properly, your Brahmins weren't pukka, because you're doing so many, sometimes they make mistakes, so those ones, you're responsible for killing them. And they're gonna, as soon as you leave your body, they're gonna get you and take the, that's the law of nature, law of karma. But he thought, you know, I'm a pious man, I'm doing the right thing, very religious, I'm doing these yagyas. For what? He was doing it. Because he wanted some improvement, right? He wanted some. It's obviously karma kanda. He's not a pure devotee, otherwise Narayana Murthy wouldn't be there. So he wants some benefit, he wants some shakti, he wants some, you know, more power, more facility. Otherwise, why is he performing these sacrifices? Karma kanda. But, you know, every endeavor is covered with some fault. So he's happy, he's enjoying, he thinks it's very nice, he's very pious, he's a great king, he's doing everything right, but a slight mistake, then look what he's going to get. He's going to get torn to pieces as soon as he leaves his body, as a result of being a good, pious person. You can't help, like Lord Indra, and in the story of Vitrasara. The Indra killed the priest, I can't remember his name, the priest of the demigod. He was doing these sacrifices, but he was very friendly with the Asuras also, so he'd do a little bit on the side. He'd be offering some to the Devas and quietly be offering also some to the Asuras, and they found out Indra cut off his head. This is, you're a Brahmana, you've cut off his head, you'd have to suffer. So he had to suffer one way or another. Anyway, his father, that Brahmin's father, wanted to kill Indra. So he performed the sacrifice where he could create an enemy of Indra. But because he chanted the mantra short instead of long, you know, you got those long and the highs and the accents there. Because he chanted it short instead of long, or the other way around, then he got somebody who Indra was an enemy of. So he got the reverse. He got the reverse result. Simply because he pronounced it short instead of long, that one word. So that, and Shibad Maharaj was telling the story of the other day of Bhrigu, King Bhrigu. He came to visit. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. He's very pious. Right? He's given away cows. He gave them all away. Then one of those cows he gave away wandered, little calf, it wandered away by itself. Nobody saw it. It wandered back into his herd. Oh, anyway, then he gave them away again. He didn't know. It wasn't his fault. This is just a cow just walking, getting some grass and walked into the other place. then the Brahmins found out, they became very angry, they weren't pacified. He said, I'll give you 100,000 cows each. Forget this one. He said, no, keep your cows. And they walked away. So they didn't forget, and then he became a lizard. But then, what did he do wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. He was very pious, man. He was doing pious activities, he became a lizard. So it's very dangerous, everything you do. Even if you're the best of persons, it's really dangerous. It says in the Mahabharata that if a Brahmana doesn't do his duty, he hasn't done anything wrong, he didn't perform all of his things that he was supposed to perform. It means he omitted something. He didn't do anything wrong, he just didn't do some things, he has to go to hell. He has to see hell for that, in the Mahabharata. Dangerous. Very dangerous. Yudhisthira, right? Dhammaraj, he had to go to hell. For one reason or another, he had to go to see hell, visit little one. Because he, whatever he was, he didn't follow Krishna, or he told a lie, or, you know, hesitated to tell a lie, whichever way you look at it. He had to go and see hell. He said, I want to see my brothers. I want to see, when they all left, when the pastime was finished, I want to be with my brothers. He said, get on this airplane, we go to heaven. I want, wherever my brothers are, I want to go there. Okay, get on the carriage. Took him to hell. The complete carnage, all these rotting bodies all over the place, stinking, and vultures, and carnivorous animals, and people wailing, and horrible, ghastly. So he said, what am I doing? I'm asked to see my brothers, get me out of this place. He said, why have you brought me here? Take me away. Okay, if you want to go, we'll go. Turn around, and then, Yudhisthira, don't leave us, don't leave us. You're like a breath of air in here, like a ray of light. He said, who are you? Who's talking? He said, me, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula. What? What are you doing here? So, and then he explained why they had to go to hell for a little while. So, and he goes to heaven, he sees Duryodhana sitting on the throne being worshipped. He said, what's going on? Where's the justice? Look, this guy is up here. What's going on? So it's a dual world. It's very, very complex. How do we understand what's going on and what's going to happen to us? What have we got in store waiting for us for karma? How do we know? We're only concerned with this present moment now, trying to adjust this moment. And we have results of actions from many, maybe lifetimes and lifetimes, waiting to shake us up and give us a new idea how to, a new situation. We're through life. Krishna says, the bewildered soul thinks himself the doer of activities which are actually being carried out by the modes of nature. So we think we're doing all this adjusting and moving and wheeling and dealing, but actually the little soul, I tell you, 1 million, on the tip of your pinky, there's 1 million souls can fit on that space. So how, amongst all these atoms and stuff, what can you do? What can you do? To try your best. But first, it's nice to know these things, because then you'll become a little humble after hearing these narrations. We feel a little insignificant. Our foundation, we feel a little shaky. Oh, my fortress, my nice body, my nice abilities. It gives a little, makes your foundations a little shaky, which is good. Yeah? Then your pride will go, then you can become a little more humble and realize that the only real shelter is Krishna. Because the material world is just constantly material energy, constantly interchanging and fluxing. That's all that's going on here in this material, in the whole universe. Just as energy is moving around and transforming into different substances and shapes and sounds, and that's all. And we're stuck in the middle of it. Sometimes it comes in forms of human body, sometimes you're just living into this passing through, experiencing the results of its pious and impious activity. Doesn't know what's going on. Well, he thinks he knows what's going on, right? I'm in this body, I like this, I don't like that, I should go for this and I should avoid that. That's all. But the bigger picture we can't see. How bewildered we are. So you can't know these things unless you hear them and accept them. You can't experiment and find out about these things. So this is they were given analogy of all these different components of our life. So it'll become a little more vivid, a little more, we understand it a little more. Then we realize that, we're actually completely helpless. Better we, first of all, we have to appreciate Krishna's position, the Lord's position, as the designer and the controller of all of this stuff. And then once, if we accept that God is all powerful, and then we'll have faith to surrender unto Him. That if it's His show, then He knows how it works, He knows the best, He knows how to get out of it. So He's telling us. So that requires faith. We accept what He says, we accept what this material world is, and we accept the spiritual world, what the spiritual world is. That's only faith, there's no experiment. And we accept in the process how to transfer ourselves from the material world to the spiritual world. It's faith, until there's realization, it's faith. What else is there? So that's what the living entity is doing. But how strong is your faith? How will you overcome this insurmountable material energy, Maya Devi, and all her assistants, 33 million? How will you overcome their activities to absorb our attention away from surrendering to Krishna? So one has to become determined just to surrender to Krishna. And one has to make the choice yourself. Make the choice to give up, to say no to Maya and yes to Krishna. That's it. That we're doing anyway. But how long would it take to say no completely to everything of Maya? Say yes completely to Krishna. How long would it take us? Day to day we change. Some days we're very strong and some days we're not. So, great. You do well, very troublesome. But anyway, at the end of the day, whatever way, however we understand, at the end of the day we know we just got to surrender to Krishna. Otherwise really there's no way out. So we come to this conclusion. So then we come to surrender to Krishna. Then we actually do that, then the faith will develop. Then Krishna will, okay, now you're serious, then he'll reveal more. He'll reveal himself more. Then you can understand, you know, apart from his greatness, how, you know, what a wonderful personality Krishna is, what a fantastic person he is, what fantastic pastimes he has, and how he actually is our, you know, our best friend, and really only wants us to come back to him, even though we may not understand it, why he put us in such a bowl of soup. But it's really for our own interest that we can frustrate this desire of doing something other than the way Krishna wants it to be done. So this is the point you have to come to. Surrender your independence and surrender to Krishna, and then your devotional service can really begin. Then you can really chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and feel Krishna, not just wish and hope, but and appreciate Srimad-Bhagavatam. Srimad-Bhagavatam ki, Srimad-Bhagavatam ki, Jai Gopinand ki.
It's what we are most assured is to enjoy. It's Krishna's promise. Why do we maintain the anxiety?
Why do we maintain that desire to enjoy?
Yeah, if we
because our nature is to enjoy. We're part of our nature is the Aladini Shakti. Shakti Dhananda, part of your makeup is Ananda, is the Aladini Shakti. Which in essence is love of God. Krishna's enjoyment is what we call love of God. So, because that's our nature, then we're lacking it now. We're not experiencing that Ananda now. So, from the soul, it's hankering to achieve that happiness. That again to be naturally situated in the Aladini Shakti. But because we don't know. Because we identify ourselves as part of this material world, then we're looking for happiness through this, how we know, through the senses of this material body. So therefore that endeavor is not wrong, because it's your birthright, nature happy. But because it's absent now, it's covered, we're trying to get it back, but we don't know where to look. So therefore we're looking in the material world. because of identification with the body, forgetting who we are, that we're the servant of Krishna. So, if you're the body, then that means the senses. If you're the body, it means the senses. And that's where you're perceiving happiness, when the senses come into contact with the sense objects. So that would be your endeavor, to find, come into contact with those objects which give them more pleasure. So that's why the endeavor, it will not stop. Unless you get frustrated with that, and then you become a jnani, then you want to be liberated, mukti, become free from it all. It's not worth it. Material life is not worth it. Let me become free. So therefore then that freedom becomes attractive. Because that's actual shanti. It becomes attractive. Therefore the impersonal Brahman is very popular. This liberation is very popular. Because the material world is troublesome to try to get enjoyment. So that becomes very popular. It's not actually happiness. It's just freedom from the struggle. Relatively to the happiness of devotional service, because there's so much variety there. It's activity. So there's so much, the happiness comes in so many different ways, but in the Brahman it can't come, it's only one, it's static. It can only come in one way. Just by you're experiencing that happiness of the Brahmanda, but it's insignificant compared with the happiness of devotional service. First of all, you don't even know it's happiness because there's nothing to compare it to. But anyway, your existence, you're feeling existence, a trouble-free existence. Because there can't be any duality there. So you can't know its happiness because there's nothing to relate it to. So it's just a state of existence, just a state of being. But if you get out of the material struggle, then that seems fantastic. I'm free, I've done it, I'm out. No more troubles. That's fantastic. But it's not happiness actually. It's not life. It's just static. But anyway, that's what they want. That's what the jnanis want, that's what the yogis want, that's what the bhaktas. We all want happiness. Right? We all want freedom and we want happiness. Everyone wants that. The karmis, the jnanis, the yogis and the bhaktas. We want the same thing. Where are you going to go for it? This is the question. Wherever you go for it, whatever your interpretation of it is, then you're classified as a karmi, a jnani, or a yogi, or a bhakta. Or a materialist. But everyone's after the same thing.
There is a mantra I remember that says, thousands of offenses are committed by me both day and night, but considering your servant, kindly forgive me, O Madhusudana. So, even when we take the process of devotional service, although unknowingly we may be committing so many offenses, so many, not willingly, but due to being still pushed by the moves of nature and by our conditioning. So, what is the way out? Because if we start to asking forgiveness to every single devotee, I mean, it would be over, I don't know, it would be possible. So what is the way out?
Well, we do it once a day in the morning. We say after the, when everyone, all the devotees are assembled after Mangala Adi, we say Vanchakalpa 3 plus 10. But you over these apparats that we're committing, then you continue the service, and then that you get free from seva aparad by performing more seva. You're free from nam aparad by doing more nam. Vaishnava pride. Little different, but you know, you associate with the Vaishnava self, the Vaishnavas beg their forgiveness, you get over that. So it's just, there's no other, because of the Krishna consciousness of this, Nam Sankirtan specifically, it's the topmost means. You can't do any better than that. There's no need to look somewhere else to improve or to be forgiven. Krishna's appeared in his holy name. It's his mercy aspect, Kali Yuga. There's no need to go anywhere else to look for that, or do anything else, to do any penance or anything like that. There's no need. You have to, it's all contained in Krishna's name. So do, just by staying in association with the devotees, and hearing this transcendental knowledge, so that's the whole ISKCON program. Serving the deity, forming congregational chanting, taking prasadam. This is the topmost activities possible to perform. Don't measure to do anything else. Just trying to avoid the offences why are we doing those things. And that will take care of it. So you don't have to worry about those things unnecessarily, because we're not making mistakes knowingly, so you don't worry about it too much. And then over and above all, like, Krishna's your best friend. And so even you're full of mistakes, at the end of the day, as far as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is concerned, it doesn't matter. He knows we're full of mistakes. He knows who he's dealing with. Yeah? The bottom of the barrel, Kali Yuga. We're still here. He knows what he's dealing with. Unfortunate, quarrelsome, lazy, all those bad habits. This is what he's come to deal with. So he's not considering those things. He's only considering what you do positive. That you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're trying to avoid the activities which are not favorable, and you're favorable to Krishna and the devotees. That's what he's looking at. Other things he's not going to... He knows it. The whole world is doing that stuff. And we've been doing it, you know, before we came into the contact with the devotee. We've been doing exactly the same thing, 24/7. So why you should worry if you're not right on top 24/7 now? Your whole life is averse to Krishna, many of us. Whole life was trying to compete with Krishna, trying to find that, trying to take his position. Whole life was based on that. How to control this life, control the energy, and that would be happy. That's Krishna's business. He controls and he enjoys it. So we've been doing that whole life, those who weren't fortunate enough to be born in the family of devotees, for years and years and years and years. And now look at the change is there, you know. So Mahaprabhu has definitely overlooked those things. He's seeing what you're doing. And he's seeing what you actually want, where your heart really is, what you really want. And he knows we're helpless, we're weak. He knows that. He expects that. But he doesn't mind that, because he knows what he's dealing with. As long as your actual goal is to know Krishna and love Krishna, and you follow the process, follow the Sangatan Yoga, then he's happy. So that's your saving grace. We can't do it. But if the devotees are happy, or Mahaprabhu is happy, then no problem. Already delivered. Here's a letter from Mayamati from Kerala. If the demigods are in the position of enjoying the results of their pious karma, how can their actions carry sinful reactions?
question.
Because I used to answer this question with great conviction, but my conviction has been shaken. That if you go to the heavenly planets, your business is to enjoy pious activities. So there's no karma there. You're just using up the results of your pious activities. But since we heard from Banu Swami, he was saying something different. That there'll still be some kind of reactions there. He hasn't quite sunk in. I haven't quite digested how it works, so I can't really answer this question. Maybe someone else who was at that class, like Jananda or Keshavi Mataji, which had some like. What was the answer? Remember, Jim? When you go to the heavenly planets, you work off your pious activities, results of your pious activities.
Piety is exhausted by happiness.
Piety is exhausted by happiness.
And impiety is exhausted by pain. So you go to the heavenly planets, and you're happy there, you're just pain, exhausting all of your good karma. You go to the hellish planets, you're suffering, and that's exhausting the bad karma.
The question is, how, if the demigods in the position of enjoying the results of their pious karma, how can their actions carry sinful reactions?
No, they don't.
Yes. They don't carry sinful reactions. Why should they carry sinful reactions? They have different. Sometimes they engage in, you know, stealing or wife swapping, or I mean, wife stealing or other things. But there are different. They have different standards of morality there in the heavenly planets. Arjuna was cursed, right, because he refused the proposal of Urvasi. He said, "You're my senior, my grandmother or whatever." And she said, "Don't, these rules on the earth, they don't apply in heaven. There's a different set of rules up here." But he couldn't adjust his mentality. So then he refused, and then she cursed him to become a eunuch for 1 year. So, yeah, I didn't understand the question. They're enjoying the results of their pious karma. How can their action carry sinful reactions? Yeah, well, they wouldn't unless they were actually performing sinful activities. they're enjoying activities in a way which may seem not, maybe not proper on this planet, but they're not sinful activities. I hope that's okay, Maya Murray from Kerala.
Unless you consider the consciousness that I'm the enjoyer, if they're not conscious of Krishna, but they're just enjoying, and that is kind of a sinful consciousness.
Yeah. Well, that's overall, right, in the material universe.
Krishna says, sarvadhanam parityaja mamikam amtam sarva papi pyor. If you surrender unto me, I'll take away the sin. So any activity that is not done in the mood of surrender to Krishna is a sinful activity. So if they're forgetting Krishna while they're enjoying their heavenly planet's life, that can be considered according to the definition of sin that Krishna speaks. I'll take away sinful activity. Any activity that's not done as in the mood of surrender to Krishna can be considered sinful activity.
Just like the sons of Kuvera who were enjoying, then they were actually cursed. It wasn't sinful what they were doing. that's her past, that's her enjoyment in the Nandanandan gardens, you're enjoying like that. Unmarried, men and women together. But they had to be cursed because they disrespected Narada Muni. It wasn't a result of their so-called impious simple activity, because there it's not simple. They go there to enjoy different ways. So everything is dangerous. As soon as you forget Krishna, then wherever you are, there's some danger. Even in heaven, there's some danger. Let's take shelter of the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.